Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, Finn at offbeatoregon.com, and this is the Offbeat Oregon History Podcast, which every weekday brings you another story from the archives of the Offbeat Oregon History syndicated newspaper column. Thank you for loading me down and queuing me up, and I hope you enjoy the show. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Yes, it's once again Blast from the Past Day. Tuesday is the day when I pull up something from the year 2009, the very first year I was doing these. Tuesday stories are short, and oftentimes the craftsmanship is not as high as the standards that I like to be judged by today, here in 2013. It's been a few years. I've learned a few things. None of that is to apologize for today's story. Although it's fairly general, I think it's pretty good. But it is short, and compared to the stuff I'm doing now, I think it's a little more boring. Way to sell it there, Finn. Anyway, let's get going. When the waters rise, Portlanders raise the sidewalks. That was kind of the unofficial, well, it wasn't the unofficial motto, but it could have been in the 1890s. Because before the advent of dams that controlled floods in Portland, it was a fairly regular thing. There was one particular flood in 1894 that I'm going to talk about today. It was a massive flood. Portlanders actually held boat races on downtown streets. Somebody caught a steelhead in the train station lobby, and a popular saloon actually moved onto a houseboat and anchored itself on Burnside, and the party raged on. You can imagine how unsanitary this all was. The story was first published on September 16th, 2009. Here we go. Most Oregonians have at least heard of the floods of 1996. It was something to see. For folks in places like Kaiser and the Mohawk Valley north of Springfield, it was devastating. Before that, many longtime Oregonians remember the Christmas flood that made history in 64. And really longtime Oregonians may remember the last one before that, 1948 monster that swept away the town of Vanport on the Columbia River north of Portland proper. But the more modern floods share an interesting characteristic. They happened after flood control dams had been built to tame this crazy Willamette River Valley. Places like Foster and Green Peter, Detroit Lake, Leeburg Lake, Dexter, Cottage Grove Reservoir, they weren't built to give you a place to fish. They were built to keep your house from floating away. Before the dams were in, the Willamette could be a rough neighbor. The very birthplace of the state, the town of Shampooey, at which citizens voted in 1843 to form a territorial government, washed away all but one house in 1861. That same year, the flood took away the town of Orleans across the river from Corvallis. All that's left is a church that was built high on a knoll nearby. Well, since then, the biggest flood on record has been one that poured over the riverbanks in 1894 and kept much of the Willamette Valley underwater for weeks. Down at the north end of the river, where it flows into the Columbia, the fast-growing town of Portland had learned to live with seasonally rising water with classic Oregon rough-and-ready style. When the river levels rose, storekeepers stacked piles of bricks on the plank sidewalks in front of their establishments to prevent them from floating away and built quick and dirty bridges to help pedestrians get from shop to shop without getting soaked any more than usual, that is. Even in the biggest flood, in 1894, no one seems to have considered closing for business until the floodwaters receded. A downtown Portland hotel built a temporary false floor in its lobby so guests could keep their feet dry. The cook at the Bureau Saloon brought a rowboat into the kitchen and stood in it while he worked. Not exactly sure how that happened. If you've ever tried to stand up in a rowboat or a canoe, you know it's a trick. The Meyer and Frank department store built raised walkways for shoppers, and shoppers came, many by boat. Erickson's Saloon downtown, known at the time for having the world's longest bar, a monster counter longer than two end-to-end football fields, basically running all the way around the outside walls of the building. The insides of the outside wall, right? The bars weren't outside. Okay, you got that. Moved into a houseboat, they did, which the owner anchored in the middle of the canal that was formerly known as Burnside Street. Bill Sullivan reports in his book that more than 1,500 boats crowded through the town's streets, and some folks in Chinatown staged an 8-block boat race downtown. 1,500 is a lot of boats. I'm not sure that isn't a little bit exaggerated. In the 1894 flood, one lucky angler found a very special fishing spot, too. The Union Station train depot downtown. This fisherman managed to bag a 15-pound steelhead trout inside the station. You can still see the high water marks on an old stone building at 133 Second Avenue. A 5-foot-high line made in 1894 and a 2-foot-high mark made in the 1948 flood, the one that washed away Vanport. Sadly, the original marks on the building have been washed away in some ill-thought-out beautification project and replaced with a pair of placards that show the water levels with arrows. But without the valley's dams and the 32.5-foot seawall built along the Portland waterfront in the 1920s, there likely would have been many more. Most likely 64 and 96 would have been among them. Despite the best efforts of flood-controlled dams, both of those events brought river levels within inches of pouring over the seawall into downtown. According to the city of Portland, the flood in 1894 reached 37 feet, the 48 flood, 33.5 feet, the 64 flood, 30.5, and the 96 flood, 31.75. 31.75 feet is awfully close to the top of a 32.5-foot seawall, isn't it? Well, that's it for our show for today. This show is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. In addition to this podcast, it includes a weekly newspaper column, a daily RSS feed to catch on your smartphone reader, a Facebook page, a Twitter feed, and a couple other minor components. Photographs and other images that go with today's show are on offbeatoregon.com, where you'll also find full citations to the sources used in writing this story, along with more than 200 other articles written over the last 5 years, all organized by date of publication. This podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details of that, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band, atlasstringband.com, and was written by Carmen Ficarra. I do Offbeat Oregon for learning and for fun, so I don't sell advertising or ask for donations, but if you feel a need to make a donation anyway, may I suggest that you buy a copy of my book instead? It's called Wicked Portland, The Wild and Lusty Underworld of a Frontier Seaport Town, published by the History Press in 2012. You can order it from the store link on offbeatoregon.com if you'd like, but if you still have a local community bookstore in your town, I hope you'll consider buying it from them instead. It sells for $20. Finally, if you're ever in Corvallis, drop me a line. Maybe we can grab a cup of coffee and talk about history. I'm at finn@offbeatoregon.com. Don't be a stranger, especially don't be a stranger if you have a good idea for one of these columns in the future. Speaking of the future, our next show will be coming your way at around 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. And until then, go out and fill up the rest of today with good stuff. Bye now.